the show.
Well, hey everyone, welcome to this week's Boundless Show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, here for another great week, woohoo, from Colorado Springs. Okay, I have got Esther Fleece and Will Rogers with me. They are both alumni of the Focus Leadership Institute, with which all of y'all out there know about, because we've talked about it before, whatever, and many of you have gone there as well. Mm. So they're going to be people out there that you know that you're talking to, but you don't know that.
My people.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So hopefully you've told them to listen to the show when it does air. But Esther actually works with me as part of my team here at Focus. So that's always good. She is in charge of millennial relations for Focus on the Family. And definitely you can find her on Facebook and elsewhere, Twitter. She's a Twitter maniac. She Twitters some of my interviews, which are always fun to go back and follow. And then Will, you're just kind of out and about on your own. Are you one of these elusive consultants, or what do you do? You have worked for Focus.
So yeah, several times.
That's good.
Several times.
Me too.
Yeah.
I did it a twofer.
So this is my second time as well.
There's
something about
that's
this
right.
place. You just got to come back.
It's the boomerang effect.
You can't
effect.
Get enough.
It's the boomerang. Okay, first of all, not only do you have to, you go to the Institute and then you have to work here at some point. So that's a given. And then you know, may or may not come back. So it's possible on both fronts.
So this might be my third time then.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, good.
Third time's a charm.
Well, that is awesome. And we're going to be talking about that for a second here as part of our roundtable. It's going to be awesome. I do want to say also that this week's show is sponsored by Cedarville University. You know, I like Cedarville because one of my best friends went there. That is my plug. But they have got a thing called the Cedarville Academy that you're going to want to check out. It's basically a way that, especially if you are in high school or know people in high school, which we have listeners that are in high school. It's amazing. Or obviously you have siblings or friends or whatever. Make sure you check it out because it's a great way that you can take online classes while in high school and get a jump head start. So just do it. You can find out more at cedarville.edu. All right. Well, Esther and Will, we want to talk about the Focus Leadership Institute and your experience here, because I was actually here my first time at Focus when the Leadership Institute was launched. Mm-hmm. And I think when it was launched, it was kind of groundbreaking in being a program that really no one else was doing in that kind of sense, addressing things related to core, basically incorporating marriage and parenting and just a bunch of other competencies into a curriculum that then could be infused back into what you're doing just in your college education. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, don't just go and get an engineering degree, figure out who you are beyond that. And how can you incorporate that and include leadership elements as well. So let's talk a little bit, because there are a couple of things specifically I want to drive to, but I just want to find out how you both ended up going to the Institute.
Well, my mother is, I'm one of those stories, but my mom told me about the Institute, and I think I heard about it probably going into college and didn't really think a lot of it. And then I was trying to figure out what to do in the summer. And mom said, "Why don't you go out to Focus?" I was like, "No, don't think so." And she said, "It's in Colorado." I said, "Yeah, I think I'll look into that." So ended up coming. It was a great experience. I didn't know all that much what I was really getting into going into it, but turned out to be a really good experience when it was all said and done.
Awesome. And you came all the way from Kentucky? Or Tennessee?
All the way from Kentucky. School in Tennessee.
Okay. Awesome. Esther?
Yeah, my experience is a little bit different. I grew up in a broken home and loved the Lord with my whole heart, but had thought, you know, marriage and family just wouldn't be for me because I never wanted to continue the cycle. But God was just always faithful and still is faithful in giving me families that have loved me. And one of those families in particular said, "We think you should go to the Focus on the Family Institute." And I laughed. I just said, if they knew what I went through, I mean, I would never be accepted. I'm not the typical Focus girl. And so sure enough, I applied. They paid for me to apply. They overnighted the application for me. And I thought, you know, I laid the fleece before the Lord. And I said, you know, if I get accepted, which I just thought for sure I would not be accepted, then I would go. And sure enough, I was accepted. And so that's how I ended up here.
Wow. Okay. Well, let's talk about, I mean, what were your expectations going into the Institute? I mean, obviously, you probably succumbed to kind of where I was, what I just alluded to, saying, you know, okay, well, I'm going to college, I'm going to get a career, I need to figure my life out, something's got to fall into place eventually. You probably didn't expect that the Institute was going to be part of that. But what about that experience once you were here was probably the most surprising to you?
Yeah, I think for me, you know, I was Miss Extracurricular Activity Girl in college, started a varsity cheer team at the school I went to and was vice president of the class and just did a lot of activities. So this was kind of just, I was going into it thinking this was another great thing for my resume. And what I didn't realize is that God had a transforming semester in mind for me. And so not only was my worldview shaped and did I start really putting meat behind what I believed, but God really rocked me with some of the lies I was believing and how I was really living my life in fear when it came to marriage and family, which I think many in our generation are doing. And so I would say the biggest change for me was not only coming away with an integrated biblical worldview, but also the way I view marriage and family, that it is a beautiful institution that is created by God, it's designed by God, and it's a good thing that we don't need to fear. There will be challenges, but it's a good thing. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. Esther, Will, and I were all involved in a brainstorming session here at Focus on the Family for really millennials, what we're calling kind of a feeder demographic that we have here at Focus. And one of the things that Esther said, I remember her talking about really how her views on marriage and family were shaped at the Institute. And didn't you also say, Esther, that, you know, you realized at that point that, wow, the Bible starts with marriage and it ends with marriage.
Yes.
And you'd never seen that as a continuum of what that looks like.
I never did. I saw marriage as hurt in it. You know, I've seen divorce and affairs and abuse, and I just wanted nothing to do with it. And I thought really that I would actually use the Bible to justify that view. I would say, well, Paul wasn't married and Jesus is still single. Mm-hmm. He's still waiting for us. Mm-hmm. But really God changed me to say, look at the Word. And again, I started with marriage. I ended with marriage. And the whole Word, the whole Bible is about me pursuing my bride. And that rocked me. That really changed me to say, well, you know, when I look at the big picture of marriage, it is a beautiful thing. And of course, the enemy is going to attack that in our culture today.
Yeah. All right. Well, so you obviously wanted to ski and snowboard and climb when you came here. But what else did you finally discover when you started classes?
Well, I was fortunate to be raised in a Christian home, split family, but still good parents that had great intention to keep me in Christian education and a good church back in Kentucky and so on. And I think the biggest thing for me as a takeaway was just the simplicity and a fresh look at faith that wasn't, you can get so into the weeds of things, and it brought things back up to a high level, and great encouragement entering my senior year of college at Milligan. And it just was a good refreshment. And not only a great opportunity for just fellowship and really working through, like, what does that mean biblically, together with people? What is life together? Is kind of Bonhoeffer works it through. And
yeah. So you obviously, both of you are several years out of the Institute at least, Master, having gone in 04 and you in 98. Well, what, if you look back, or have you done this kind of exercise where you've looked back and said, you know, had I not gone to the Institute, maybe what would I be doing differently? Or
I'll go on that one. I went to the Institute and went back to college, and I came back to work for the Institute. Then I left, and I came back to work as a contractor for Focus with the Truth Project, and then I left. And I came back to work in Focus again with international initiatives that they have. So I don't know. So this might be my fourth or fifth time with Focus or something like that. So yeah, it
so
would
definitely
a lot
practical
of things would have
change.
Changed. Sure,
yeah,
sure.
Definitely.
Yeah, I think, you know, I just am a different person. It really was a life-changing semester for me. And I think a big part of what I've seen is my life, and I hope that my life matches what I believe. And I've just been able to add more substance to what I say I believe. And I've been able to look at the Bible in its fullness to say, you know, how does God design family? And how does he design the state to work and the government? And I just feel that my worldview is integrated and more founded on the Bible, which as a Christian, that's what we claim to live by. So it's really equipped me to live like that, to live my faith.
Yeah. And I think what I've seen from, because our area has taken a lot of interns from the Institute, and so I've gotten to know many of them over the years. But to me, it seems like it is one of those, like you said, integrating kind of the concept of church and doing faith and infusing it into whether it's your work life or your personal life or whatever, isn't just do this program or coming. You know, I think for me, it was kind of like growing up, I was just told like, okay, well, you're involved in church and you go and do that. But I didn't have this cross, you know, I guess, discipline understanding of what that looks like to really affect the way that I think in any conversation with someone. And I was jokingly telling Esther, when it comes down to the marriage thing, you know, I said I was, you know, a little bit bitter because I didn't have the Institute when I was in college. And so I was like, no wonder I'm still single. I don't even know anything about what marriage, you know.
Yeah, I'm how, still single too, Lisa. I got you.
We're all single. Okay, so, Okay. So maybe we can't guarantee that you'll get married straight out of the Institute.
But that's not why I went.
Okay.
Thing. Will, huh? Will's being quiet on the issue there.
Run away.
He's got, maybe his mom's working on that for him too. He has to go back to Kentucky and she'll have someone for him. So we'll see. But so what would be your, the encouragement that you two would have maybe for people who are interested in either considering the Institute or are well beyond Institute age, but just say, okay, obviously there's something here that I need to refocus on. How can I go about doing that?
Yeah, well, I would definitely say if you are still in college or if you are slightly out of college, I think that it's under the age of 27 still, that I would do anything you can. I mean, I would take a semester away from work to go to the Institute. I think that, again, our generation is just very self-focused and it's about, you know, climbing that career ladder. But I think it's so important to take a step back and to reflect and to look at the Lord with peers. I would tell everyone to go. And then if you are older than that, you know, there was so much life change happening at the Institute. Dr. Del Tackett took some of the curriculum that was being taught and put it into a small group curriculum called the Truth Project. And so we've trained millions of people around the world with the Truth Project. Now we have a college edition called True You that's out here at Focus. And we want to take, you know, that life-changing curriculum and we want to make that available to people. So I would say to check that out as well.
Yeah. I think a big thing is you have to be intentional about your future. And when you're in college and you're in high school and everything, the world really sets up kind of like a, here's the way it's done and it misses a lot. Mm-hmm. So any which way you look at it, I think you need to take the intentionality to dig into something, whatever that is. And there's a lot of programs out there. And I think the Focus Institute is excellent in its, and its balance of worldview, how it looks at family, church, and society, digs into marriage and family and parenting and leadership, mm-hmm. and just the combination of that, it's unique. Like you don't find that many other places. But any which way you look at it, like take time to invest in life more than just career development.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's huge. I mean, that to me is when I look back on my experience and everything that I was told going into college and leaving college was, okay, make sure you figure out your career and that it's a good fit. And I took all those 100-page surveys and all that crazy assessment mm-hmm. stuff that I had to do to figure out what my bent is toward or whatever, and mm-hmm. all of that. And then the mentality was, okay, and then everything else in your life, just try to fit it in. So try to fit in marriage, try to fit in a calling or a ministry, try to fit in your other relationships, try to fit in church, make sure you go, you know, all that kind of mm-hmm. stuff. So I think this is huge as far as taking a holistic approach to that. And what does it look like to look at your whole life and where God is taking you in all of those areas? And then how do they, in fact, align?
Yeah. So, and, you know, I certainly didn't go to the Institute looking for an MRS degree. I didn't go to college for that because mm-hmm. I just didn't think that that was for me. But one thing, when you do learn about gender roles, when you learn about being a Proverbs 31 woman, when you're being challenged by peers, I mean, I feel that I am a better employee. And so I feel like that has helped my career. And it was worth it. Taking the time out was worth it. And I just don't think our colleges, even our Christian colleges, are teaching young people what it means to be a godly young person and to put ethics and integrity before anything else in business and to value marriage. And so, yeah, obviously I'm a huge advocate.
Well, and that's cool. And I think it's interesting how, you know, it's a good fit because we're going to be talking in a few minutes here to Alex and Brett Harris, authors of Do Hard Things. And now their new book, Start Here. And they're great examples, too, mm-hmm. of guys who, you know, they can be intimidating because it's basically like I look at their lives and I'm like, oh, my word, they've just accomplished so much. And what am I doing? But at the same time, just that challenge to our these younger generations to mm-hmm. say, you know, there are great things that the Lord can do through yeah. you. And really, the time is short. And let's yeah. get out there and let's do what God's calling us to do in a way that glorifies Him. So, okay, well, I want folks to get info on the Leadership Institute. Go to focusleadership.org. They are also on Facebook and Twitter, so you can find them. Many of their profs and their different folks are just fun folks to follow as well, so you can kind of get the whole scoop. They get good conversations going there. So, but I want to thank you both, Esther and Will, for joining us and sharing a little bit about your own experience. I think that's helpful, and I think it's encouraging just to see how really God does use things to change our hearts and to change our minds and our perspectives.
So thankful for that.
All right.
My simple mind cannot understand. My feeble faith cannot comprehend your grace. By the blood of the Lamb, I made white like the snow. By the stripes on His back, the Father I now know. Your grace, grace, how it covers me, I'm justified. Now I'm redeemed by the blood of the Lamb, the Lamb who was slain. Now I'm redeemed by the blood of the Lamb, the Lamb who was slain. By the nails through your body, atonement was made for those who believe. Tossed about by the sea, I like a tree firmly planted will be by your grace. Grace, how it covers me, I'm justified. Now I'm redeemed by the blood of the Lamb, the Lamb who was slain.
Everyone, for this week's culture segment, I have Alex and Brett Harris with me by phone. Hey, guys.
Hey, Lisa.
Hey, Lisa.
Calling in from the East Coast, where they are taking a break from classes, I'm sure. How are you guys doing this year with school?
We are doing well. It's been busy. We've been doing some traveling, even some international traveling during the semester. And so it's been a little crazy, but good.
Yeah. Well, that's good. You're out at Patrick Henry out there in Virginia. Many of our listeners are also in college, so be encouraged, folks. The Harris brothers have to do college as well. Though you're finishing strong, right?
We're doing our best. Working on it. God is faithful.
That's awesome. Okay. Well, all of you guys out there know that Alex and Brett Harris are the authors of Do Hard Things and definitely founders of, and they blog and all kinds of other stuff. We know them from therebelution.com, R-E-B-E-L-U-T-I-O-N.com. We've talked to you guys before, so it's always great catching up. And in between college and marriage for you, Alex, and traveling and writing and speaking, you have written Start Here, your newest book, and basically the subtitle on that is Doing Hard Things Right Where You Are, because I'm assuming, and I want to hear a little bit about this, that basically people read Do Hard Things and then they're like, yeah, I would love to, but I don't even know how to do that. I'm just trying to live my life, and I'm trying to, you know, just, I don't know, eventually earn a living and get out there and do what I need to do, and why do I need to do hard things in the middle of all that? So tell us a little bit about why you guys felt you had to give some kind of practical hands and feet to what you'd said in Do Hard Things.
Yeah, well, this is Alex speaking, and I think that was exactly it. We wrote Do Hard Things, and it was meant to be, you know, really the manifesto of this new way of approaching challenges, a new way of approaching the young adult years, and it was really focused on inspiration and education, and then we had a lot of young people who read Do Hard Things, who were excited about that message, and yet they still had questions when it came to how do I get started, what does this look like, you know, how do I deal with this, that, or the other, you know, just the balance between, you know, big projects or hard things that you're doing in your walk with God, or you know, how you get your friends your church behind what you're doing, or even just, does this have to be this big, exciting, get you in the news type of thing? Is that all that Do Hard Things is, or is it something I can do, you know, right in my everyday, ordinary life? And the answer is yes. And so really, Start Here is a very practical field guide to doing hard things wherever you may be and whatever God has given you to do. We hope it just fleshes out what doing hard things looks like a lot more for readers.
Yeah, that's good. And I think, you know, let's talk about this a little bit. You know, we've done a lot of, or have been doing a lot of research here at Focus about really millennials and kind of coming out of the Gen X generation and into, you know, addressing millennials now, and how millennials are actually very similar in many ways to the Buster generation, who would be our grandparents, in that there's a much more, I guess there's much more interest generally in being part of a story that's bigger than yourself, in serving, whether it's your country, whether it's a greater cause, whether it's social justice. There's more optimism and hope towards marriage, towards children. Millennials tend to be more pro-life. So are you finding that resonate within your generation, you guys?
Absolutely. This is Brett speaking. We've actually read several books based on some really award-winning research that shows that a generation doesn't just follow as like a straight line consequence of the previous generation. So, you know, our generation, the millennials, are not just, you know, Generation Y, kind of the next letter after Generation X. We actually, the general cycle tends to be that the generation rising takes after the generation that is kind of passing away. And so that would be our grandparents and even our great-grandparents. One book that we read called Millennials Rising argued that this generation is really taking the place of the last great generation. And I think what your research shows is accurate.
Yeah. So let's go ahead and talk a little bit about, you know, you guys obviously have been out and doing hard things. I mean, you guys wrote this book for a reason. You guys, I know when we talked last time, we talked about just really how you guys started out there with, rather than kicking back summers and just doing random stuff or whatever, you took on some pretty challenging internships. And then there are people out there, you know, sailing the world in boats and starting orgs and all kinds of stuff. I want to talk to the average person right now and have you guys, because we alluded to this a little bit, the person who maybe is finishing up school, maybe is trying to like hold down a job, someone who's out there and they know that they have a passion for something, they're not quite sure what it is, and they want to take a maybe one step into moving in that direction of doing something that matters. Where should they get started?
That's a good question, and really, I don't mean this as a cop out. A lot of it does depend on the individual person and the individual situation. We would really encourage, and this is what we encourage in Start Here, is that first of all, doing hard things doesn't necessarily mean that what you're doing or where you are is going to change dramatically. You could stay, you know, exactly where you are and keep doing exactly what you're doing now, but the way you do it and the reason you do it changes dramatically. Your attitude with which you approach what you're doing changes dramatically. And that can be a change between not doing hard things and the now doing hard things for the glory of God, and really preparing yourself, strengthening yourself, being faithful with what God has called you to do. And I think what we've seen, if we could share a principle that we've seen proven true time and time again, is that faithfulness is what sets us up and prepares us and is the means God uses to bring us to the place where, you know, a door opens and a new calling is given, and suddenly, you know, the next step becomes clear. It's not something that we always, you know, can plan ahead on. A lot of times it's a matter of just being faithful right where you are, and then once God does open the door, once he does give you that encouragement through a friend or through, you know, something you read, watch, listen to not be afraid of pursuing that just because it's difficult. And that's where the do hard things mentality comes in.
Sure. And then I know you guys talk about this in the book as well. Then what about, say you have, I love the way that Bill Hybels describes it as a holy discontent. And, you know, he says a lot of times it may seem elusive and you just think that there's something every time you hear about it that you're just like, either that's not okay or that's something that I'm really passionate about or whatever, you know, kind of grabbing onto that, you have an idea of what that looks like. Maybe you start something, whether on a small scale or on a large scale. Talk a little bit about then hanging in there through the long haul, about what it looks like actually developing this, actually building support around you for this, dealing with discouragement when maybe, you know, your thing doesn't take off and you're not on Fox News and CNN and everyone thinks you're amazing.
Well, I think that all of those things are so important, but they really, you know, each of those particular challenges, you know, coming up with the idea, you know, taking that first step, then, you know, really building something that will last, persevering when it's hard, dealing with discouragement, you know, all of those things are going to happen at various points along the journey. But as for someone who just has that idea and that passion, it really, you know, they don't need to feel like they have to have all of that figured out before they can start. You know, that's really what I think paralyzes us a lot of times, is we feel like we have to know, you know, the 5-year plan. Well, you don't. You just need to know what's the next step. And I think when God puts something on your heart to do and something that keeps coming up, you know, the first step is just to maybe check out a book from the library about the topic. You know, start looking up some websites online, find out who else is doing stuff about this issue and how they're going about it. And maybe you'll find out there's someone doing exactly what you think needs to be done and you can get involved with them. Or maybe you find out that no one's doing what needs to be done and there's an opportunity for someone, and by this I mean you, to step in and actually start doing something productive. And along the way, yes, you'll need to figure out how to persevere as the going gets tough, and yes, you're going to have to deal with discouragement. And we talk about that in the book, but don't feel like you have to have the 5-year plan figured out before you can take that first step.
Yeah. So what are some good examples of things that your generation, whether they're specific stories, maybe a specific story or two, or just some general ideas of what your generation, people that you know, are currently at the forefront of right now, or that you're leading the charge in?
Yeah, I think a lot of different stories come to mind. Really, what's so neat to us about our generation and then also the generation right behind us coming up in the teen years now is just how innovative and creative they are. They're getting involved in all sorts of things, and it really, you know, a lot of it, you know, can be, you know, put in the social justice type category, whether it's, you know, raising money to dig wells in Sudan or to build an orphanage for deaf orphans in China, you know, to buy blankets for orphans in Cambodia, you know, whatever it is, young people are getting involved. And a lot of times it's not a matter of, you know, sometimes you hear about people who, you know, start organizations, you know, or they have their own nonprofit or they, you know, launch their own startup. But a lot of times making a difference really is just getting plugged in, like Brett said earlier, plugged in with what people are already doing. So we see a lot of young people who are doing incredible work, spreading the word, raising awareness, and raising funds for groups like, you know, International Justice Mission or Compassion International, World Vision, some of these other organizations that are doing a bunch of work of all different kinds throughout the world. And young people, young adults, are coming up with ways, creative ways, in their communities or even, you know, across the country, around the world, through the internet and social networking to raise awareness and make a difference in just some really, really, you know, honestly, very creative ways.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think, you know, we've seen a few examples around here. Obviously, in the Springs, there are a lot of different things going on. There are a lot of different ministries and organizations. But one thing that I got involved in recently is we learned here that in town, the agencies that work in our town, one of their biggest needs is toilet paper to give out to families who need toilet paper. We often think of food drives or backpack drives or toy drives or whatever, but toilet paper is not covered by food stamps. And so a lot of people just can't get it. And many of these agencies were only able to give out like one roll per family per month. I mean, it was just crazy. And that's an example of something where I had never even known that need, let alone known how to address it. And
right. So
there were a bunch of us in various ministries here in town that got together and started a drive for it to donate to these folks who are kind of on the front lines and helping families directly with that. And I think that's probably a great example of something that, you know, doesn't have to be big, folks. I mean, it could be as small as something, of, you know, just recognizing that kind of need and moving ahead with that.
Oh, absolutely. So. Yeah. I mean, just keeping your eyes open for needs like that, because that is something that, you know, 99.9% of us would never think of. You know, until God brings that need across our path and we realize that there's something here that we could do something about. I'm thinking of a story of a young woman that we met in this last year named Jamie, who found out her church was doing a missions outreach to a town in Africa called Karagodo, and they were ministering to them through this humanitarian Christian humanitarian organization. And she found out that one of the needs was for shoes. And shoes, you know, that's something that, you know, as Americans, we take completely for granted. You know, we all have, you know, several pairs, if not dozens of pairs of shoes in our closets and our garages and boxes, whatever. And she found out, you know what, people in Africa need shoes. And so she started doing a drive, and her original goal was like to get 100 pairs of shoes or something like that. It ended up taking off, and she collected over 4,500 pairs of shoes, which is an example of God taking something small and making it so much bigger than what the person who came up with it originally ever expected. But also, it's another example, like you said, of noticing a need that maybe you wouldn't think of until God brings it across your path. And then it's just about being faithful to respond to that in the ways that God has called you and equipped you to respond.
Exactly. Wow, and it sure can start young. You just your story just reminded me that our Clubhouse Junior magazine, which is our magazine for our smallest kids, 4 to 8 years old, is going to be doing a shoe drive this summer for Haiti. They heard about that need as well. So getting them started early, which I think is exciting. So hopefully we can get the word out, through Boundless for that too. For those of you out there who have little nieces and nephews who maybe want to be part of this, and maybe you could do something together in a mentorship role with them in getting them passionate about helping others. I think too of just people going out, knowing people in your Sunday school community or in your acquaintance who are going through a rough time. I mean, in this economy, there are people who can't pay their bills. There are people who can't make ends meet, and to know that need and be willing to and able to bless them, I think, is a huge, huge thing. And I always say the converse of that is people have to be willing to be helped as well. And by denying that, you're denying a person an opportunity to serve and to be a blessing. So smack down on both sides right there. So anyway, but well, you guys, this is really cool. Again, the book is Start Here. Those of you who haven't read Do Hard Things, make sure that you read that as well, because as we said on the front end of the interview, that really is the inspiration for this movement, whatever we want to call it, whatever we're being called to do as a generation and as the church. These guys have done it beginning in their teens. You guys wrote that when you were 18, right?
Yeah. Yep. Right.
Yeah. Okay. So, and now these guys are getting old, folks. So, I mean, they had to, you guys are just aging. So you had to, you know, finally give
walking
some.
Walking with a cane now.
Exactly. Yeah. So practical. Well, I know, college guys, whatever. You're almost done. You're almost done. No. So, and there's hope for us in the Gen X generation too, even though we're all, products of the, highest divorce generation. I think it was probably some of the most cynical people out there. I think a lot of us are saying, hey, maybe I did waste my teens. Maybe I did get caught in the vortex of lameness or my 20s. Who knows what happened to them? But now maybe I have some means. I've succeeded in my career. Maybe I'm out there and I'm really realizing, wow, I've got some time and some means really to go about and helping here. So I think there's a message for us as well. So, okay, well, the book is Start Here. Find out more about these guys at therevolution.com. Start Here, Doing Hard Things, right where you are. And of course, we'll catch up with you guys in the future to get more info and stories and find out where you guys are, because, you're part of our audience and our demographics. So we have to keep tabs on you.
Thanks, Lisa. We'll be keeping tabs with you.
All right. So, make sure you make it to your afternoon classes. Don't be like cutting or anything.
Oh, no. We will.
All right. Well, all the best to you both. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks, Lisa.
Bye-bye.
Choice to make. I'm tired of my yesterdays looking just like today, always the same. Been reading familiar lines, I'm hoping to renew my mind with the color of the phrases, red and black on wrinkled pages. You sail, hold on, live your life like you won't be long here. This could all be over now. Don't let regrets come crashing down. You sail, hold on, live your life like you don't belong here. Don't you know?
Well, hey everyone, for this week's Inbox, I am in the studio by myself. Whoa, I've been abandoned. No, actually, this is legit because poor Steve and Candace Waters are home sick, or Candace is at least, with sick kids, and so we can't draw upon her wisdom right now. That is unfortunate. So I'm just here. And there was something I was going to just weigh in on, I guess. And it was the idea of, because I've had a lot of you write to me on my page on Facebook or whatever, talk on the blog. Remember like way back in the day when I said I was going to write a series called That's Hot and like help guys figure out what's hot. Okay, well, I'm going to do that a little bit here. I'm just going to answer basically or give some advice along the lines of what is hot when it comes to like being on a date and dealing with the whole money issue. And I'm a little bit flabbergasted that I actually have to say this, but it is just weird, okay? And let me start off with a little anecdote. I went out with a guy once. Actually, we had met online, and then he came out to visit and was here from the West Coast. And we basically, long story short, he was here for 4 or 5 days, stayed with one of my pastors. And during the course of the weekend, I guess it was, with the exception of 1 or 2 Starbucks runs, I paid for everything that we did. I don't think that's okay. And to my discredit, I let it happen. I was just so deer in the headlights about the whole situation. I didn't know what to do. And so it was just super awkward. And here's the way that it would play out. It was like, we'd go out to eat, the bill would be presented. And then it was this awkward dance of, just whatever. And then he finally like threw in some money and was like, oh, you know, well, I'll throw this in. And so there was like a little bit of that, like on the front end. And then after that, he just wouldn't do anything. So that was just crazy. And I was just like, whoa, and trying to justify it because on all other accounts, he seemed really normal. So that was weird to the point where later on in the weekend, and I had been very careful on the front end to say, you know, okay, I'm going to actually cook some, so it's not too much of an expense. We had done this like train trip thing and I'm like, I'm definitely going to buy the tickets for that because I don't even want him to know how much they cost. That's my deal. So I ordered those online ahead of time. So that was fine, but you would think that then, you know, maybe he would step up and pay for something. But that did not happen, to the point where near the end of the weekend, it was a kind of a bad weather weekend, and we decided we were going to go out to eat somewhere. You know, I'd cooked some previous days and everything. And he said to me, or I said to him, I said, well, you know, we can go out. Where do you want to go? What are you in the mood for? And he was like, well, I don't know, he said. I mean, do you have like a gift card for anywhere? Oh, my word. Seriously, people, this is how it went down. I just about blazed away, but did I pull a Lisa A? No, I was just continually deer in the headlights. And here's what I said. I was like, yeah, you know, I think I probably do. Well, sure enough, I had a gift card to like Ted's Montana Grill and we went there, used my gift card for like $25 or whatever, and I still paid the difference on the bill. Okay, so I am not, you know, I am not exonerated from responsibility of this. I don't know what happened, but I just had some kind of like something just possessed me. And I don't know. I just went all crazy and didn't do the right thing. So I was just completely, I don't know, blazed away by that entire weekend. So here's the deal, guys. When you go out with someone, first of all, and this is a whole other question, but just make sure that both people involved know that it's a date, okay? Let's make that happen. Let's not ask people out randomly via Facebook. Let's not ask through a friend of a friend of a friend. Let's not say, hey, let's hang out, whatever. Say it's a date, especially if you've known the person for a while, because you need to establish, I'm no longer your friend. This is actually a date, okay? Make that happen. Then when you actually go out, when the bill comes, I wish this were a video right now, because here's what I'm going to say. The bill comes and you just go, ba-bam, and you grab the card and you take it, okay? None of this weird dance, okay? Because this is what happens with me. I would rather, and I've told people this, especially going out with a group, honestly, I would rather cover the entire table than go through the nonsense of nickeling and diming everyone and everyone figuring out, well, what is my portion and all this craziness and people all weird and some people have cash and some people, I can't even stand it and it's too awkward. So if it's that awkward with a bunch of people, think of how awkward it is on a date. So you will be hot, man, if you take the bill and just pay it and just quite frankly say, I got it. Say something like, I'm going to pay this bill in its entirety. Say whatever you say it in several languages if you need to, because honestly, girls will be feeling all awkward about it. And just, you know, they just don't know what to do because there's just so much ambiguity on that front nowadays. If you want extra hotness points, OK, guys, take out your notebooks because this is just a bonus for you. When you're out with someone, I actually did not know that these kinds of guys existed until I had a conversation with one or two of them recently. I was out with a guy and another girl. So it was three of us. And he actually covered both of our bills. Okay. And we're not even like dating, you know. So just a guy, like a guy on a date, you just need to pay and you need to take the bill and you need to just put it out there right away. Okay. Then if you want extra points, like a guy just covering a girl's bill regardless. Now, if you're taking like your entire Sunday school class out, you don't have to do that, whatever, then just figure it out. But one guy, maybe two girls, or like a married couple and a single girl, just being covered is awesome, and it is just very freeing, and we just thank you for that. So that is just a little bit of Lisa A. wisdom born out of my own experience, which was very sad. I've now recovered from it. That was several years ago that the whole gift card thing happened, but it will forever be in my memory. And when I go out with a guy, if he pays, he just automatically has points. So thanks much, all. That is it for this week's show. As always, we love to hear from you. Write to us, editor@boundless.org. Maybe if you want to comment on what's hot and what's not. And maybe I'll have one for the ladies coming up in the near future or something. So that is it. Again, we'll see you around next week. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the family.